Welcome, everybody, to the February 2017 podcast for the Learning and Development Professionals of Greater Philadelphia. My name is John Laskowski, and I'll be your host this evening. In the studio tonight, we have with us Andy Jefferson. Andy's the co-author and co-founder of the Six D's, or the Six Disciplines of Breakthrough Learning. Andy was kind enough to come up to us from Wilmington, Delaware, earlier this month and lead one of our Saturday morning workshops. And he's even more gracious to follow up that event with an opportunity for folks in the community to ask questions and get answers as a follow-up to the great event that we had earlier this month. And we'll talk a little bit more about Andy in just a moment. Right now, we want to take an opportunity to thank Brookwood Media Arts, our partner for virtual events, including our podcast series. Brookwood is an e-learning, virtual, instructor-led, and technical training leader, providing technical and training solutions since 1995. And for our group, don't miss our upcoming events in March, April, and May. On Saturday morning, March 25th, Dr. Mike Brenner will be presenting a workshop on how to amplify your emotional intelligence to improve your business outcomes. On Saturday, April 22nd, Teresa Hummel Crowlinger will be presenting From Gas to Glee, an opportunity to look at how to include humor in your instructor-led and virtual training programs. And then in May, we have a great back-to-back opportunity with one of the founders and still leading pioneers in virtual training, Cynthia Clay. Cynthia will be coming out from Seattle to join us, first for a free talk on Wednesday night, May 3rd, as part of Philly Tech Week, and then the following day, on Thursday, May 4th, she'll be presenting an all-day workshop geared to those who actually do virtual training and an opportunity to hone your skills at the feet of one of the masters. So again, please check out our upcoming events on our website, ldphilly.com, and we appreciate continued support of the great community here in Philadelphia. As I mentioned, we're in the studio tonight with Andy Jefferson. Andy is one of the co-founders and co-authors of the Six Disciplines of Breakthrough Learning. Originally trained as a lawyer, Andy eventually became the CEO of a training and learning and development company based in Delaware. However, in 2010, Andy decided to, along with a partner from the group, Roy Pollack, strike out on their own and take to the world the Six Disciplines of Breakthrough Learning. Andy, it's great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you, John. Very nice to be with you.
All right, Annie, so a little bit about yourself for those who will be listening. You mentioned this during the session you had with us earlier this month, so I thought I would bring it up because I have family from that area. Where were you born?
I was born in Wilmington, Delaware. I am one of those rare birds who actually was born in Delaware and stayed here. So I can claim to be a native Delawarean.
And speaking of Delaware, where did you end up going to college?
Well, I completely stayed here because I attended the University of Delaware and got my undergraduate degree there, and then a law degree at the Delaware Law School, also known as the Widener University School of Law.
And I'm always curious, having been a high school teacher myself before I moved into the corporate training space, people often have very diverse and eclectic stories as to their lives and to their careers. If you think back to when you were in college, when you were 18, 21, what did you think you'd be at 40 or 50? Did you think you'd be doing what you're doing now, or did you have dreams of doing something else?
No, I did not think I would be doing what I'm doing now. I actually was interested in the sciences when I was an undergraduate and pursued some minor studies in the sciences, and I had thought about perhaps becoming a physician, but then found my love of business along the way and pursued that, but never in a million years would I have thought that I would ultimately have written books on corporate learning and development that looked at the whole system of learning with a goal of trying to ultimately drive a much more significant impact than companies are seeing today.
Okay, looking back at your childhood or maybe undergraduate law school, was there any event or maybe a series of events that laid the foundation for your eventual move into the business world and eventually into your work as an author and a leader in corporate learning and development?
Probably the precipitating event that set me on the path to where I am today was actually breaking my leg playing soccer. I broke it in a soccer game when I was in school at the age of 17 and wound up getting some unfortunate complications with it. And it caused me a fairly significant delay in my education that while delaying my education enabled me to early start a business, and that business was fairly successful in a fairly short period of time, and I loved the business. Well, I shouldn't say that. I didn't love the business I was in. I loved the whole sort of concept of it, and then continue to pursue it. And that probably more than anything took me off the track of pursuing either a degree in the sciences or perhaps going to medical school at some point, and led me to where I am today.
So after college, after law school, what did you do before you ended up at the Fort Hill Company?
Well, I have had the luxury of a number of different careers. I have been, as you mentioned, I have been the CEO of a number of businesses. I have been a practicing lawyer. Doing corporate M&A work and complex litigation work for a brief period of time that I practiced for about 2 years right after law school. With the and I'll add the caveat that when I became a lawyer and went into practice, it was never with the goal of being a lawyer for the rest of my career. I wanted the education, and I am incredibly glad that I went to law school and got the education because it's proved very useful in everything I have done since. But it was just a stepping stone. After practicing law, I went back out and worked in another company that was a startup company that in the technology field that we grew very quickly. And I moved from that into a spin-off of a company that was a piece of IP coming out of a publicly held company that we spun off and monetized. And then I wound up at the doorstep of the Fort Hill Company. That the founder of Fort Hill was is a fellow named Cal Wick, and Cal had come up with an idea back in the early 2000s that one of the key missing ingredients in learning and development was a simplified mechanism for driving learning transfer post-instruction. And he had created a piece of technology around that at the Fort Hill Company that originally was called Friday Fives. It then morphed into something called Results Engine. And in fact, he's got a new product now that's called 7020, which is also focusing in on that community of practice and transfer question and does it quite well. But we all came together from very different backgrounds. Actually, we've been introduced at a couple of conferences that we have the great makings of a joke because between Cal Roy and I, we have a lawyer, a veterinarian, and a priest. And so somebody thought that that would be the good makings of a joke. But we all brought different backgrounds. Cal was the only one who had a learning and development background. Roy and I were both really business people, although Roy also had a degree in veterinary medicine and a PhD, and had taught at Cornell. He had run a significant pharmaceutical business unit in animal health. And so three of us came together with these very different perspectives, and that's ultimately what gave birth to the six Ds, was that as we looked at the transfer technology, which did what it was supposed to do, and it did it very well, that we realized that there was a great deal more to the solution of the problem of driving results from corporate and enterprise-wide training and development. And that that really led us into getting into the research and then subsequently identifying the 60s and writing the first book.
Awesome. So we're going to go right into some of the questions that participants who were at the live event submitted follow-up. And you kind of already answered it, but maybe if you could either expand on it or if there's any additional information that might be useful for people who wanted to get a better understanding of where this process and this system came from. I mean, the first question was, where did the original idea for the 60s originate? So, I mean, you mentioned the work with Roy and with Cal, but can you be a little bit more specific? I mean, let's put it this way. Did it come from you guys reading the landscape in the work that you were doing and realizing what was missing? Was there more of a light bulb moment, or was it more a gradual, aha, I think there's something, but then we have to go out and test it first?
I think it was a little bit of all of that, because what we were working on was trying to understand what else needed to be in place if we were going to effectively drive outcomes from learning and development. And we knew that clearly transfer was a key missing link, and unfortunately, still today, that is true, almost 15 years later. But there were other elements that were in the mix that we explored. We were able to get a great deal more insight into from leading companies and organizations, public entity organizations around the world. And almost iteratively, it started to come together in a process that we recognized was essentially treating learning as a system. And that, as much as all three of us, I think, would love to say that we were blindingly insightful to come up with the six disciplines, I think we did a nice piece of work, but process thinking had been around for an awfully long time before we came around. That what we did was to identify the key characteristics within the process from the idea that I need a learning program to the actual result back in the workplace. And how did that system fit together? And then I think we did a very good job of writing about it in a way which was understandable not just for learning professionals, but also to business people. And that enabled the book to cross audiences where it might not normally have done that. It might have typically stayed as a mainstream learning book, that we found that there was a broader audience of business people who were interested in understanding what their role was in this process and how they could support driving results from learning and development. And so, as I say, iteratively, it all came together that there was a fair amount of debate and discussion and in fact argument about what were the 6 Ds going to be in terms of how we named them and what did they in fact describe. But ultimately we all came to a consensus on it, and that led to us writing the first book about it.
Now, you mentioned the crossover appeal. Having myself worked for several large companies in a variety of industries, I guess one question that I would have for you as a former business leader, how would in your mind, a good learning and development professional go about approaching a business leader, and not necessarily, the CEO. Obviously, we're talking about large public companies, but a director or a vice president who might be leading a business unit. How can a L&D professional go and argue for that transfer? I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Having been a high school teacher, and then moving into the corporate space, I see it in both realms. In education, it's the push to, just dump content on people, and teach to the test, and then you got another 2 weeks, and you cram more stuff down kids' throats, and then you test, and quite frankly, it's almost kind of the same way in the business world. You know, it's like, oh, here's 8 weeks worth of learning material, and we'll give you 2 days to do it. And it often never includes that ability to practice, that ability to transfer the knowledge. So, how could I approach a business leader and say, well, there's a lot of content here. I mean, maybe we need a little bit more than a day on this, or 2 hours, or maybe we need a 3 week program as opposed to a 2 week program.
Well, that's a great question that, and I've had people ask me a similar variant of the question over the years, and I think there's lots of different answers to it. But probably first and foremost, I think that the conversation with a business leader needs to start from the standpoint of, are you getting the kind of value that you want from your investment in training and development? Because most business leaders don't believe they are. And if they don't believe that they are they prepared to support trying a different approach? Because one of the places where you can fundamentally change the conversation with the business is to simply start by approaching them vis-a-vis learning and development from a business perspective. And I say that because one of the things that Roy and I are very strong believers in is that learning and development is a business function. That it's a business function like every other business function, and it should be treated that way. And as a business function, you ought to have a pretty clear idea of what is the finish line? What are you trying to accomplish in terms of business outcomes? A clear statement of what business outcome will be served by any training and development program. And one of the things that we found is if you can start having that conversation, speaking the language of business to the business, that oftentimes they become much more receptive to both trying new ideas and supporting new ideas to help drive impact. And I shared with the group when we were together in Philadelphia the quote from Arie de Huys, who was the group vice president of Royal Dutch Shell, that the only true sustainable competitive advantage of a company of the 21st century is the ability to learn faster than your competitors. And that's true now more than ever. And I think emphasizing that fact, that from a competitive advantage standpoint, learning and development holds as a very significant lever in terms of driving competitive advantage. But that's only true to the degree that the business partners with us. And so we need to make the case to the business that it's in their best interests and our best interests, and ultimately our organization's best interests, to work collaboratively using new approaches and techniques, not fads, but proven techniques that will optimize that system that we described earlier to produce results. And our experience in very large companies all over the world is that the business is receptive to it, business leaders are receptive to it, and once they start to see the impact, once they start to engage with learning and development from a business standpoint rather than a learning standpoint, that they're much more supportive and the system has a chance to flourish.
Okay, one of the questions that came up from several participants who emailed us had to do with the issue of time, some called it energy, some called it bandwidth, but it came down to this. So, jumping off of your point of being able to talk to the business in their language, if for whatever reason we're limited on time for a project or bandwidth, in order to achieve those business outcomes or help achieve those business outcomes, do you find that all of the six disciplines have to be implemented? Or is there an opportunity to say, you know what, for this particular project, we can, pick one or pick two, and we'll still be able to drive better business outcomes with this project? And then hopefully, then that'll convince the business to next time bring us in earlier in the conversation or give us more time so that we can actually engage in the entire process.
It's a very good question, and that I think that the best way to answer it is to say that very rarely do we see anybody who is going to take an existing program and retrospectively apply the whole six disciplines and try and change the program. However, you can take an existing program and make tweaks to it. That there are a variety of things that we teach in the 6Ds, both in the workshop and we write about it in the books, that where you can make a single change to an existing program that will have a transformational impact to the potential that that program has. And a change can be as simple as making sure I'm clear about outcomes. Do I really know what the destination of this program is? Because if I don't, then I may actually be teaching the wrong thing. Or it may in fact be something as simple as how do you invite a participant to a program? Because one of the things that we know is that we're asking participants to come into a class or sit through a virtual session and give us discretionary effort. And if we want them to give us that discretionary effort, they, as adult learners, have to understand why they're being asked to do it. But all too often, we never answer the question why for them. Simple changes like being explicit about why. What is the value here? What's the benefit? People talk about what's in it for me. It's a very similar analog to that. But that would be the kind of simple change that we're talking about. Or in terms of your instruction and looking at your actual, the four corners of the instruction.
Right, so Andy, so we're talking here about discretionary effort and the things that we can do, if we don't have the time to run the full 6D program. So I guess the question that I have is this really an iterative process? I mean, you think about all the things out there right now, waterfall, you think of SAM, think of Agile, a lot of these iterative process. So do you consider the disciplines to be that in that realm, or do you really have to start at the beginning and work your way to the end in order to really achieve the most success?
I think that we are clearly susceptible of being an iterative process, that you can pick and choose amongst the elements that are contained within the 6Ds and select things that are going to add real value to an existing program or a new program. You will obviously get the most value if you practice the 6Ds both at the program curriculum as well as learning organization level and have everybody singing from the same page of the same hymn book so that people are speaking a common language around results. I think that the biggest difference, and when people ask us about the comparison between SAM or ADDIE or Agile or my personal favorite is the just in terms of naming, is the new one called the Llama model, a lot like Agile methodology, that they are all really focused in on the design of instruction. And I think they're all good models. They all have their strengths and that they do what they're designed to do in slightly different ways in terms of creating effective instruction. And if that was our job, I would say that's great. The story ends there. But that's not really our job. Our job is creating results. It's creating a pathway to proficiency, as our friend Steve Rosenbaum says. And so I think that the big difference is that most of the models that you see in learning and development are really much more focused around that how can we employ best practices for the creation of instruction? Where, from our perspective in the 6Ds, the instruction is just one piece of the equation. That you have to have done effective work before the instruction. You have to have effective strategies post-instruction to drive transfer. You have to have effective mechanisms of support. And then an effective strategy for evaluation of results, not just activity. Now, any one of those elements can be disaggregated out and focused on and improve and create improvement. But from a holistic standpoint, we think that ultimately the goal should be to try to practice all of them effectively.
So one of the other questions that several people had submitted was, again, to your point, comparing the 60s or why somebody would choose the 60s over Addie or Sam. Based off of your previous answer, would you say that they're more complementary? Like if you have a learning function that's following Addie in terms of how it develops its actual programs, it's whether it's an hour-long course or a 3-day program or a 3-week program for employees, that they could take the 6 disciplines and then lay that on top of their current ADDIE system or whatever model that they use to actually develop the instruction, and that it's more complementary than it is competitive.
Yeah, great point that the six disciplines was never intended to replace instructional design models. And it shouldn't. And you used the word complementary, and that's exactly the way that Roy and I look at it. That the again, that whether you're using Addie or Sam or Llama or one of the others, that the ultimately your goal is to create really good instruction. And what the six D's does is get you to focus further upstream in the process. So rather than getting clear about skills and behaviors, what you really need to be clear about initially is business outcomes, and then you can start in on skills and behaviors and crafting learning outcomes. And then much further downstream when the instruction is finished, so that you have that transfer strategy, you have the mechanism to measure results. And so, from our perspective, they are complementary. And if you look at our clients around the world, that uniformly they have brought the six disciplines model into their learning organization to work as a companion to whatever instructional design model they're using in-house, which more often than not is some variation of ADDIE.
Okay. So another question, and that kind of ties into what we've already talked about, I think it was submitted by Josh, who asked that, do you have to implement the 6Ds in order? Now, I think we've already kind of answered that in the sense that you've said you can take one of the disciplines, apply it, and you can see better results. Now, not probably the best results if you were to implement the entire process from start to finish. But in that question, he asked, as an example, low-hanging fruit like getting manager support. And you talked about that as a critical factor during the workshop. And I think in case we have folks who listen into the podcast who didn't make it out to Drexel 2 weeks ago, I think that's such a critical point. In your mind, how important is it that manager support is in place in order to drive those business outcomes?
There are a handful of success factors that we consider to be absolutely fundamental to whether or not you'll get results. One of them is that manager engagement, and by that, what I mean is the engagement of the participant's manager in the process. And that there's a fair body of research out there that is very persuasive that American Express has studied this. There's been work done at Pfizer that's looked at this. We've looked at it. That shows that when managers engage before the instruction with their direct report about what do they expect to get out of the instruction, what help might they need. Now, I'm not talking, they don't need to sit down for five hours to talk about this. 5 minutes will do. Ideally, it'd be more than that, but some conversation about the learning can drive a very different outcome. That conversation between a participant and their manager about the learning, about how they can support the learning and be successful with the learning, has a profound impact on the attitude the participant brings into the classroom, on the degree to which they'll give us that discretionary effort that I mentioned earlier, how engaged they are, and the likelihood that they're willing to begin putting that new learning into practice, transfer it, apply it after the instruction long enough and well enough that it becomes their new skill or behavior. And so it's a very long way of saying that managers are indispensable to the process. And one of the key impediments to getting managers to coach more is simply they either don't really know how, or they don't know how in the context of the program that their direct report is attending. And so one of the things that we encourage is simply provide managers with a job aid, with a piece of performance support that describes the key business outcomes of the program, the skills and behaviors associated with those outcomes, and give them some coaching questions to ask. Coaching questions that can be used before the instruction in a brief interaction, and coaching questions that can be used after the instruction in a brief interaction. That is something that by itself can have a positive change on the kind of results that you will ultimately see downstream of the program.
Now, one of the questions that I had, but then I believe both Josh and Ken had mentioned, was, and you hit on it, I was actually going to wait till the end, but you talked about, you know, you called it a cheat sheet in the workshop for managers. But one of the things that we had talked about and the questions that were submitted was, if you are struggling with those business outcomes, are there cheat sheets out there when you're in the early stages of the process, when you're in, say, you know, the first discipline or the second discipline? Are there cheat sheets out there that L&D professionals can use to help help tease out those business objectives?
Yes, we provide a range of job aids and tools to help. You're using the example of what is the D1 process and the outcomes planning wheel. And there is an interview guide for how do I have a constructive consulting dialogue with the business so that I'm able to ferret out what business needs do they have and that we can support. And maybe even before I get to that, is this really a training issue, an issue that training can solve? And if it is, then what are those business outcomes that the business is looking for? And so we have tools that that people can use, and I think you saw one of them that I gave the group when we were together. That is that brief consulting guide around how to use the outcomes planning wheel. There are others that are contained in our books, the Six Disciplines book or the field guide to the Six Disciplines, that also have the kind of tools that you're describing, and I know that we've got some on our website as well.
So based off of your experience then, where do you often see the process breaking down? I mean, is it in a particular stage, or does it really vary as you move across organization to organization? Is there any kind of pattern that you can see why things, let's say if people are trying to implement the six disciplines, where they fail or why they fail?
I think that the likelihood of failure goes up dramatically, and not necessarily just with the six disciplines, but with learning in general. If you don't have a clear understanding of what the destination of a program is, what's the ultimate objective of this program, that one of the quotes that we like is, if you don't know your destination, how can you possibly plan the journey? Well, that would be one of the critical breakdowns. And it would be true both in terms of using the six disciplines model, but also using, I think, any model. That having a clear sense of the finish line, of the destination, is critical as a starting point. You know, the old adage is to begin with the end in mind. And so that would be, I think, one of the key places that breakdowns would occur. That other places that I think that, I'm not sure breakdown would be the right word, but you clearly can get friction, is there are some cultures where you're simply not going to get managers to coach, and that they don't view it as their job. They're not going to step up and be part of that process. That is the job of learning and development, not them. And there are times where there's nothing learning and development's going to do to overcome that. Well, you still have to provide successful learning and development programs that lead to results. What can you do? Well, you have to come up with what are, I best describe as a proxy for the manager. And there's a variety of ways that you can do that. That you can create coaching pairs out of cohorts. You can have the first cohort that runs through have get coaching from facilitators and subject matter experts, and once they're through, they become the coaches for the second cohort, and so on. And so you're creating almost a peer coaching relationship. But you have to, I think that the friction happens when you run up against a problem and decide, okay, it just won't work, rather than looking at the problem and saying, okay, let's solve the problem and come up with a solution. Because I've seen incredibly creative people in learning and development around the world who have bumped up against a particular challenge as it relates to the application of either the 6 Ds or ADDIE. And instead of folding up their tent and saying, well, this just won't work, they try to come at it from a different vector. And that enables them to come up with creative solutions to solve for and still achieve the aim that is at the heart of each of the six disciplines individually, but also at the heart of the overall model, which is all of our work should be geared towards ensuring that when a participant leaves the instruction, they say, yes, I can do this because the program taught me how to do it. Because I know I'm going to have the opportunity to try it, and I believe I can get help if I need it. And then, yes, I will do this because you have motivated me to do this, that you have persuaded me that it's in my best interest to give you that discretionary effort that we talked about. And so, getting people using our work and using our intellects to come up with the strategies that ensure that we're optimizing for the core principles of the 6 Ds will lead to success and will help us get around any of those friction points, which naturally happen in every workplace, in every work environment. You're going to bump up against the wall periodically. That's just life. It's the question is are you prepared to figure out how to climb the wall? And that we've been remarkably impressed over the years at the degree of both creativity, cleverness, and innovation from learning and development professionals to come up with strategies to accomplish the goal of the discipline, even if they didn't accomplish it the way we originally envisioned it. That's okay.
Yeah, you remind me of the old saying that culture eats strategy for breakfast. So, so I guess when you talk about friction, and we look at the six disciplines, we look at that transfer, and then also to I think the big point that you keep coming back to of driving those business outcomes. Would you then say that one of the key ingredients for a successful L&D professional is flexibility? Because I'll say this: I mean, a lot of folks who transfer in from a more academic background, like myself, former high school teachers, or have some kind of quote unquote education background. A lot of folks come into L&D from being a subject matter expert in a particular field or a particular process, or just a process for a company, and then they get either asked to train or they want to train. But you run into a lot of people who, no matter how they got into L&D, they are stuck. They, are purists in one way, shape, or form, and really can't, for lack of a better term, think outside of the box. So, since you've traveled the world and worked with, as you said, successful L&D people, all, from South Africa to South America to the US, would you say that flexibility is a real key for L&D professionals?
Yes, I think we need to be flexible. I think we need to be innovative. I think we need to get out of the box that we've placed ourselves in and describing our work as being learning and development professionals And with all due respect to your title of your organization in Philadelphia, I don't think that's the business we're in. That I think we wind up building a box around ourselves when we start thinking about ourselves as being responsible for learning and development. We're not. We're responsible ultimately for being people who facilitate attaining results. Now, we don't own that responsibility exclusively, that this is a shared responsibility between us and the business. But at the heart of what we do is the result, not the pathway to get there. And that, but if we can be a little bit more flexible, if we can be a little bit more innovative and allow ourselves to step outside of the four corners of instructional design or of great facilitation skills and start thinking about the whole system, then I think we can start really making progress towards getting to the holy grail in this, which is to create systems that produce that competitive advantage that I mentioned earlier for our organization. And so I think the other thing that I would mention, and it popped in my head when you're speaking, is I think that we need to do a much better job of knowing our organizations and knowing the business that we are serving. Because you correctly said it, oftentimes people come into L&D from all sorts of different places. That some have no L&D background at all, some are subject matter experts, some are traditionally trained instructional design people, but there's no single path into learning and development. But the single barrier that we see frequently is that the learning and development professional winds up knowing a great deal about learning and development, but not knowing a great deal about the company or the business that they're serving. And that one of the things that we actually encourage and teach in our six disciplines workshop and certification is that learning professionals and learning teams ought to at least once a quarter have a business person come in and talk about what the business is trying to achieve, both at a strategic as well as a tactical level. Because if you don't truly understand the business that you serve, I don't know how you can be most effective in serving it. And so, to me, that is one of the blind spots that you really reminded me of that is an important factor for us, is that we should make sure that we understand how does our company make money? What are the key, who are the key competitors? What are the competitive disadvantages that we face? What are the competitive advantages that we have? What are our key strategies for the coming year? Those things are important for us to pour into the overall mix of information that we have that enables us to create those great experiences leading to results.
And you
I almost got
mentioned
up on my soapbox there, John.
it's quite okay. You are preaching to both the choir and the converted. So, and I agree 100% around the business. I can't tell you, I've worked retail, I've worked in, food service, worked in telecom, and across the board, it's the same. You see that isolationist view. And it's even more shocking. It's one thing, I think, big companies nowadays have terrible onboarding, usually for everybody. And it's usually even worse for the actual L&D professionals, often who are responsible for developing onboarding for everybody else. But you even have cases where people are kind of resistant to learning about the business, and you get that, well, it's not my job. And to your point, it's, well, it is your job because the company may not exist in 3 years if we're not driving that performance. So now you had mentioned the certification process that you guys have for the disciplines. So I guess final question for you would be, if folks are interested in learning more about the disciplines, where can they do it? What can they get into? And when can they actually go ahead and engage with you guys?
Well, thank you for asking. that we teach both open enrollment workshops as well as in-company workshops. And I think we probably teach vastly more in-company workshops, but we do have open enrollment. And the next one that we have coming up begins in March, and it's actually going to be a virtual online workshop that will be taught over 4 sessions, March 17th, 24th, 31st, and April 21st. You can get more information about it from our website, which is www.the6, the letter D, the letter S, dot com. So the6ds.com. And that six is a numeral, not six written out. But visit us or send us an email. If you're interested in an in-company workshop, we are delighted to talk with you about that. You can email at info@the6ds.com, and there's an info link off of our webpage as well.
All right, and since you brought up the question of the Holy Grail, I'm a Monty Python fan, and I do have to ask you if you know the average airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow.
Swallow. I do not. Do you?
Maybe, but I don't want to get tossed over the side of a cliff, so.
Get tossed over the side of the cliff. Yeah, I'm a fan of Monty Python quotes.
All right, so Andy, we appreciate your time, and for all those listeners out there, don't forget upcoming dates in the spring, March 25th, emotional intelligence, April 22nd, adding humor to your training, and our two events on virtual training in May. So, Andy Jefferson, it's a pleasure, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your group. And Joanna, thank you to you and Brookwood Media for giving us the opportunity to do this.